got Professor Fawaz Jerges on the line. He's the director of the Middle East Centre at the London School of Economics. I just wanted to ask you a bit about the EU's decision to lift the arms embargo. Now, firstly, William Hague's point of view is that even the threat of such weapons being transferred to the rebels will be enough to bring Bashar Assad to the negotiating table. How credible is that, do you think?
My reading of the state of mind of President Assad and his conduct over the last 2 years tells me that I don't expect Assad to respond in the same way that Mr. William Hague believes him to do so. I think had the decision been taken a year ago, it would have made a probably a critical difference. The Syrian conflict has now gone too long. It's an open-ended wars by proxy. Assad is fighting a war to the bitter end. He views this war as existential. His regional supporters are deeply involved on his side. Russia is deeply invested in the survival of the Assad regime, if not Assad himself. And I doubted very much whether the threat, European threat, sending arms to the rebels, would basically make a qualitative difference, in particular because the United States remains opposed to arming the rebels. And I think the game changer would be if the United States decides to intervene militarily directly in the conflict, either by sending American boots on the ground or even arming the rebels.
But that still seems quite unlikely, do you think?
Yes, I think the irony is that the Americans played a critical part behind the scenes in trying to convince Europeans to lift the arms embargo. They wanted Europe to lift the arms embargo, yet America remains at least reluctant and opposed to directly intervening in the conflict. And this tells you about the thinking of the Obama administration. Obama does not want another military adventure in the Middle East. Basically, he is trying to pull out American forces from major theaters, particularly Afghanistan. And he believes that Syria is the responsibility of Europe and the Arab world, and that's why he's reluctant to commit major political assets and military assets to the conflict in Syria.
Critics of William Hague's approach say that even if the UK, say, manages to identify what a Foreign Office official has called the good guys among the rebels, any weapons sent to them will soon make their way to groups that we would rather not have armed, such as Islamist groups like the al-Nusra Front. What do you think of that theory?
Well, first of all, I fully understand the logic behind Mr. Hague's position. He is frustrated. The Syrian conflict has basically taken a huge toll, human toll, inside Syria. The Assad regime has not responded to most kind of messages. The conflict goes on. Many Syrians are being killed, and the British government and the French government would like to at least do something about the situation. I think lifting the arms embargo, let's be clear about it. William Hague has made it very clear that Britain has no intention to provide arms at this particular moment or in the near future. The way Britain views lifting the arms embargo is a political tool, a diplomatic tool, a threat to exert more pressure on Assad to change his calculation. So it's really, what we need to understand is that the logic behind it so far, I mean, Britain has not made a decision to arm the rebels so far. The question is, so even if Britain decides, let's say in the next 4 months or so, in September, to send arms to the so-called moderate elements within the armed factions, that is the Free Syrian Army. one of the lessons we have learned over the last 50 years when it comes to civil wars and regional conflicts, once you send arms to a particular country, to a particular faction, the supplier will have no control over where the weapons go and how they basically travel and who has access to these weapons. This is really one of the empirical lessons learned by most of us students in internal wars and regional conflicts. So yes, I expect Britain and France to provide the arms to the Free Syrian Army, the relatively secular faction among the hundreds of armed factions. But I doubted very much whether Britain and France would have control over where the arms go after they enter Syria. This is a reality. But let me make a qualification here. Mr. William Hague has made it clear more than once that Britain knows the risks that these weapons could and would fall into the wrong hands, that Britain is willing to take risks given the escalation of the conflict in Syria and given the huge human toll that the use of massive force by Bashar al-Assad has exacted on the Syrian population.
If I could just ask you one more question. The US seems to be putting a lot of hope into the idea of this peace conference. As far as I can see, it's unclear whether the peace conference will ever happen. It's unclear who among the rebels, who among the Syrian government officials will attend. What's your view of the peace conference? Do you think it has any prospects of success?
No, Paul. I don't say anything original if I say that the proposed peace conference in Geneva faces daunting odds. Major challenges. I would argue that the odds are against a diplomatic breakthrough for a variety of reasons. The conflict has gone too far. Too much blood has been spilled. The conflict is viewed as a zero-sum game by both camps. Regional powers are deeply involved in Syria's killing fields. It's no longer an internal conflict. It has mutated from a political uprising to an internal armed struggle, and now basically wars by proxies. Literally, multiple wars by proxies are taking place in Syria. But to mention the fact that Russia and the United States are also don't see eye to eye on the nature and the outcome of this particular conference. But a qualification, there is no other option on the table. The proposed peace conference is the only light at the end of the tunnel, the only hope. And in this particular sense, I would argue that even though the United States and Russia know how difficult this particular proposed conference is and will be, the Russian foreign minister last night said it's extremely difficult to even convene such a conference. But the reality is, they have intensified their diplomacy. They are making a concerted effort to convince their local and internal allies to give the proposed peace conference a chance. And they're also, what we need to highlight here is that America and Russia are deeply anxious about the escalation of the Syrian conflict, its spread over into neighboring countries, and also the risk of a region-wide conflict, the involvement of Israel, Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Hezbollah, basically changes, complicates, exacerbates this particular conflict, and there's a real danger of all-out war. And that's why it seems to me that given the interest of Russia and America, there might be a chance that something might happen. And we're not talking about really a week or two. We're talking about, I would argue, the way Russia and the United States view this particular proposed conference. It's a matter of really 9-8 months of negotiations, and this would coincide with the end of President Assad's presidential term, 2014. My take on it is that the United States and Russia are viewing 2014 as the tipping point of a real political transition, whereby the end of Assad's term, elections would take place, and the transfer of authority a transitional government with might take place.
With Assad or without him?
Without Assad. Naturally, I think the Russian and the Iranian leaderships have made it very clear that Assad will stay in place till 2014. I take it that both the Russian leadership and the Iranian leadership basically would like to see Assad go. A face-saving formula. He stayed, he fought, and then a new government would take its place. The question is, what kind of government, what kind of transitional government, what kind of reforms would be implemented within the security forces, in particular the army and the security forces, and the balance of power between elements of the regime and the opposition itself. And this is really where the talks and the hard work and the details become very complicated.
Professor Fawaz Sherjee, thank you very much.